This song's gonna be stuck in my head all day now, but that's okay. Mike Rupp joining us on this edition of Puck Culture. I'm Jackie Redman, and Rupper, I was just telling you before we came into this studio, I can't be allowed on the roads in Jersey anymore. Like, first season here that I'm actually driving a vehicle on the road, and I'm gonna say the over-under on times I get honked at on a daily basis is set at about 3.5.
What is your philosophy? Because this is the biggest adjustment I felt like in New Jersey. I believe honking is a language, right?
Okay.
So there's different ways. I don't know, you being from outside Toronto, or yep. Toronto, and I'm from Cleveland, well, if you give a quick little beep back home, that's like...
That's polite.
Beep, you know, like, hey, beep. Just a little heads
light
up,
screen.
The light's green.
Beep.
You might want to go.
Right.
But like, if you lay on it, that means you want to get out of the car and confront the person back where I'm from.
Yeah.
Here, it's like, it's common.
Commonplace.
Common, yeah. So I don't know, is it offensive to you when people lay on their horn? Do you feel like they're...
It's not offensive, but I do get angry. Like, what someone lays their horn on,
yeah.
And it for me, it's daily here in Jersey, because I drive like a stereotypical Canadian would drive. I'm polite. I let people in. I'm
sorry.
Checking my blind spot all the time. Like, I'm a dork. Like, I should not be on the road, though, because it's aggressive here. It's aggressive. It's scary. And I do get angry, though, when I hear the horn. I'm like, what do you want me to do?
But I think that people hear, though, when they're so used and they're so numb to being honked at or honking,
sure.
that they're not meaning it that way. You know what I mean? Like, I'm offended by it. Like, when they beep at me like that, I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, and I start getting angry, but I think that they're just like, you know, and then you look over and it's like an 85-year-old man.
And they're
like,
fine.
He's not trying to fight me.
He's
just letting me know that I'm not driving appropriately.
Yeah, that's true. But I'm sure I'll get better with time. But it's hard. It's hard to navigate around here. There's a lot of different highways, a lot of different, I don't know, I get lost a lot.
No, it's brutal. It's brutal because of everything that you ever taught about driving. The roads are different here. I remember when I got called up to the Devils.
Right.
And I was playing in Albany.
So first NHL
first
game
ever? First
ever?
NHL game, yeah.
Okay.
It was on my birthday. It was January 13th. And
oh,
I
that's
got called
cool.
up. And I got called up on the 12th, went to the hotel. So I drove down from Albany in the American Hockey League. And I was at the hotel at the Meadowlands. And the people that don't know, the Meadowlands is, you know, this area that where you had Giant Stadium, you had Continental Airlines Arena, and still now is MetLife, and they have this whole, you know, a big wide array of things going on there. And
there's a lot going on.
It's in the middle
on.
Of nowhere, and it's the swamplands of New Jersey, and you have this stuff built there. Well, anyways, I at the time there was a Sheraton hotel that literally was 700 feet. from the arena.
Okay.
I'm looking at the arena outside my hotel room. So I know where I need to go in the morning to pregame
sure.
skate. I wake up, get in my car, and I get to go over there, and I can't get there. I can't get to the arena. Like, I'm getting turned around to getting onto the turnpike. I'm like, nope, this ain't it. And I get out, and I'm on a different road. I'm going back and forth in front of the arena.
So you're basically almost lapping the arena.
Yes. And then finally I got on this, like, inner route that looped the arena and at the time Giant Stadium, and I'm driving, circling it now. I was late. It took me 35 minutes to go right there. I could have walked. If there was walkways, I could have walked, but it was like walking over highways. I couldn't do that.
So you're this like young kid, young guy, you're all excited. It's like the biggest day of your life and you're lost.
And I'm panicking.
You can't get into the arena, and you can't, like, I would imagine too, like, you can't call anyone. Like,
I can't
who
call
can
anybody.
Call?
I don't know anybody yet. Like, this is my first call up. I don't have any friends on the team yet.
Yeah,
so,
you don't got Scotty Stevens on speed dial yet. Like,
I'm like, wow, what a great start. You know, I'm all pumped, trying to take it easy, going into the first skate, and I was late for my first skate.
Oh my gosh.
So Jersey driving, it's a big adjustment. So I feel for you there.
Yeah, it's. I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready for it, but I wanted to bring it up because some of your best stories, and I remember you telling me these stories when I first started here. You have almost run over, like, some pretty big legends in your life. Like, not once, like, you didn't have one encounter. You've had multiple. You got to share this with our people.
It's almost you can't believe it, right? Like, there's that many. Who has that many? I've had a few different, let's just say it could have changed. Let's just say the Giants would not have probably won a Super Bowl back when they...
almost ran over Eli Manning.
Yes.
Let's start there. What happened?
So it was the year... when did the Giants... I think they beat the Patriots in...
2007?
It would have been right there. That's when I was playing for the Devils. And I was driving. Johnny Oduya Him and I were in the car.
Okay.
And I was driving him home. He was in
home. There was a witness.
Yeah, Johnny Oduya was in the car. And I was dropping him off at his apartment in Hoboken. And again, the difference in driving where I'm from, crosswalks are, you know, you don't just come flying across a crosswalk as a pedestrian. Like,
right.
there's vehicles there, right? So
yes.
The vehicles have the right of way. Well, here it's different. If there's a pedestrian crosswalk, the car has to stop. And I'm not paying attention to that because I'm driving, I'm talking to Johnny, and all of a sudden Johnny yells. And he's like, whoa! And I look up and I slam the brakes on. And I stop and I'm talking. The front of my truck is here to you. You're Eli.
Okay.
And I slam the brakes
on. So we're talking like a foot.
Yeah, a foot. And I remember Eli had a hat on. It was down in his eyes. He had a book, a backpack on his shoulder.
One strap.
One strap over
the cool kids,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. I don't know that this is Eli Manning. I almost hit him, and I'm like, boom, and I stop, and he just stops in the street, and he just looks at me, and he's like, hey.
Just waves
I'm
at
here.
You?
Yeah. So, and as soon as he did that, Johnny looks at him, he goes, oh, my gosh, that's Eli. And he puts his hand down like this because he's his neighbor.
He's
in
embarrassed.
The building. Yeah. And I waved to him, and he just kind of like, meh. And just kind of walked off. I'm like, I almost ran over Eli Manning. Like, are you kidding me?
The elite Eli Manning.
It could have changed the history of the NFL that year.
And it would have changed the history of
winner.
Your life,
yes,
too.
Yes, it would have changed a lot of things
you
for me,
would have
too.
Been in hiding,
so
for
that
sure.
was that was the one. There yeah. was one where I was in Columbus. I was playing for the Blue Jackets. The Coyotes were in town. That's when Gretzky was coaching.
Yeah.
And we were playing them the next day, so the arena had a circus there. The day before, and I was taking the kids to go see the circus. So I'm in the parking garage, I'm running late. I'm just, you know how you go in parking garage, just ripping around in circles because it's full.
Well, I don't rip around, I'm Canadian, I'm careful.
You're taking your time.
And I get honked at for it.
So I'm ripping around each level, going up and up and up, and all of a sudden I slam the brakes on, and it's the same thing. Maybe not as close as hitting Eli, but it was still within feet of running over Wayne Gretzky.
Oh my gosh.
Barry Smith was with him. The whole coaching staff.
Did your heart sink?
I got traded from the Coyotes to the Blue Jackets. So those guys, I know them and they know me. So I'm like, I don't think they knew it was me because I literally buried my head and I just waved and I went like this.
You hid yourself?
Yeah. I almost ran Wayne over. So that was another one. And then when I was playing for the Rangers, we shared the same practice facility, or they still do, I think, up in Westchester with the New York Knicks.
Right.
And I was late coming to practice. Torts is the coach, so I'm ripping in here, and I drove this pickup truck that had this huge lift on it, and it was ridiculous.
It was souped up.
So the point being is it's higher than usual. Well, you know, the guy I almost ran over is taller than usual. Rasheed Wallace is like 7 feet tall. And I'm ripping into the parking lot, and I turn the corner. This one is on him. This is Rasheed Wallace's fault, because when you're walking in a parking lot and you're walking across a parking lane, I'm a firm believer. You walk across the lane, then you walk down along the cars. You don't walk diagonal.
Yeah,
you know
no,
what I mean?
Diagonal walks are like
that's disrespectful to the people and they're trying to get.
Now
somewhere.
You're just being arrogant.
Yes,
you know
yes,
you're gonna walk you're diagonal across
you don't
the
walk
street.
Diagonal. Well, I come turning into this parking lane late, and I almost hit Rasheed Wallace. This is the only one that there's almost a confrontation where
this
close. Rasheed Wallace gives me the hairy eyeball. I look at him, and because I'm so high in this truck, my window's down. We drive by each other, and we both just like stare each other down.
Did you feel more confident about the stare down because you're in the big truck?
Yeah, I was in a diesel truck, so I had the
nailed it.
Yeah, so I gave him the little stare down. We stared at each other, and I'm just like, listen, man, you don't know who you're messing with. I've almost hit bigger stars than you. You know, that's what I'm thinking. But good. Thankfully, I didn't hit any of them. But it was a. It's a decent rap sheet of celebrities that I've almost run over.
Yeah, you know, I came into this conversation saying I should not be on the roads in Jersey,
maybe
but maybe you should not be on the roads because
that's
we
true.
Don't. But you know what? Almost doesn't count. You didn't hit anybody, so
that's
the good news. But I love those stories because it's like, what are the odds that you would be driving recklessly around three professional athletes? But all's well that ends well. Let's kick off this episode. Been a heavy week in the NHL. We're going to try to keep it lighthearted, have some fun, talk about your career a little bit. But obviously, one of the big stories this week on the heels of the firing of Mike Babcock was the story of Mitch Marner and submitting the list on work ethic and then having Babs show it to the entire team.
Yeah.
Obviously, we don't need to get into how manipulative it was and the tactic from Babcock. But I'm curious for you as a former player, because it sparked this whole debate about how do you motivate a player in today's NHL? For you, what was the best way to motivate Mike Rupp?
You're bang on, though. It's different to how you handle each guy, right? Like, I didn't mind.
That's what I think. I think it's different for each person.
Right. Yeah, I didn't mind the coaches that would make it hard on you and be demanding. John Tortorella is one of my favorite coaches I've had, and he was very demanding. But he's respectful in the way that he would let you know when he was happy with what you're doing, not just, it wasn't always the negative, but.
So we always talk about when he's criticizing, but he encourages too when it's there.
He's good, and the thing with Torts is you gotta have a relationship where you're, I remember the one time with Torts, so as much as Torts would be on you nonstop, I remember my first NHL game, we're playing the premier games over in Sweden, we're playing against Anaheim and LA and to start the season. I'm new. I just signed there. I haven't played a game yet. I play one period. Our team stunk in the first period of the first, kicking off the season. We're coming to the locker room. Torts is mad. We know he's mad. I'm sitting here thinking, he ain't going to come at me. I'm the new guy. I didn't really, whatever. He comes in and goes right at me. And he's like, I didn't sign you to come in here and score goals. I came here to, I signed you to come in here and play, be a big presence and be a physical presence. Call me out. I played 20 minutes. I didn't play 20 minutes. The team played 20 minutes. I played three of those.
Yeah.
And, and I'm like, whoa, man. So, but he could push the buttons there. But then he's also fun because you can have the relationship. I remember in practice, later on in the season, I used to always mess around with my teammates I know you played, Jackie, you know how when you're standing in line for a drill in practice, it's like the worst spot for guys, people taking shots and then coming around the glass?
Yes.
Well, you're kind of in a prime spot. You got to pay attention. So guys used to always, I used to always mess around with the guys where I'd take my shot, I'd go back in line, and I'd take my stick and I just drag it along the stanchions on the glass.
Yeah.
And it would sound like click, 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 click. It sounds like a puck coming around the glass, right?
Right.
So I would come in there and I'd be like, heads up, click, 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 and guys would just, they duck like this. So, nothing uncommon. A lot of people do that and mess around in practice. So I said the one day to Danny Girardi, I'm like, I'm going to get Torts. I'm going to get Torts with this. He's like, do it. Because Torts would stand maybe 5 feet further up in line.
Right.
But he would watch guys. He had the whistle in his mouth. He'd watch guys come down. And then when guys would wind up the shoot, he'd kind of look to the next one. So he's not watching the play finish.
Right.
So I come in and I just give a extra loud one and just ding, 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 ding with my stick around the glass. And I'm like, heads up!
Yeah.
And Torts literally just drops down to the ice. I mean, it's like in a cartoon when a turtle goes in a shell,
Yeah.
He just drops down and he's sitting like this. And then he's paused and then he starts to get up. And then all of a sudden you hear everyone laughing. And now he notices in his eyes, he's like, who did that? And he looked right at me. But it was great because he likes that. You know what I mean? He's good.
Yes.
You can mess around. It was a good time to be all right, this is the right time. And he's I won't say what he said because it's Torts. But you have fun with it,
Right.
So my point is, as long as you got the respect of the guys, there's different ways to push. For me, I was probably more of a guy. I loved, my favorite assistant coach ever was Tony Granato. Tony Granato would come in. This is how you'd pump Mike Rupp up for a game.
Okay.
And you might call it a little high maintenance, Jackie. I don't know. It might be a little bit of high maintenance.
But
Tony would come in and he'd be he'd just walk up to me. I'd be drinking my coffee before the game and he'd get really close to my face and he'd be like, I can't wait to watch you play tonight. He goes, I can't wait for the big rig to get out there, just hitting, getting in there on the forecheck.
Yeah.
It's going to be, I can't wait. And he grabbed my shirt and he kind of give you a little shake. And that stuff, that would pump me up. I'd be like, yeah.
I'm ready to go.
I'm going to show you, Tone.
Yeah.
And I'd get a goal and he'd be the first one on the bench to whatever. But I've also had coaches who were trying to, let you know. I had Pat Burns on the other end. The way he did it and he pushed the buttons, he was hard-nosed. I didn't always respond to it, but I eventually learned and had a great relationship with him when he was advising for the New Jersey Devils later on when he wasn't my coach. I really like him, and he wanted what's best for me. And, it's about what he wanted. It's just you got to manage everybody a little bit differently.
I think the perfect word, it sounds like you know, the coaches that you had that were hard on you or that maybe tried to push your buttons, you knew that you had their respect.
Yeah.
So you never felt like you were being taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. It always felt like you were being pushed. And I think
there's
a difference, right?
Huge difference.
And that trust, we hear that word a lot, right?
Yeah.
It almost loses its weight. But there was a trust there that this is for my best interest. This is because they want me to do well. They don't want me to fail. And I think that's kind of the separation. But I got to go back to the torts story because you can't just throw that out there and me not follow up on it. The boys must have loved that.
We were giving him a hard time with it. He literally, he almost swallowed his whistle. And it was like a cartoon turtle. Like, that's the best way to put it.
He seems like a guy, like, I cannot imagine there are many times for John Tortorella where he is caught off guard. He just doesn't seem like the type. He seems like a guy that, you know, is pretty collected most of the time. Maybe not collected when he's passionate.
He's
not.
Yeah, no. It was good to see him. But that's what's good too, is that he was okay with showing that side.
Yeah.
And by showing that side, that he actually is human. He's not this robot who's just is demanding all the time. It made us, I think, respect more. I love playing for John Tortorella.
There's a human element.
But I loved playing for him.
Did you?
Yeah.
I love that. I love torts. Obviously, I mean, it sounds like you had a pretty good relationship with most of your coaches, but if you had to single out a guy that just was maybe your favorite or like the most fun to be around head coach, who would it be?
Dan Bylsma. Dan.
Really?
Bylsma,
you didn't even think about that.
No, I didn't have to think. Because the other part you got to know, though, too, is I went from New Jersey Devils, which was very buttoned up. I wouldn't be able to have
beard.
Facial hair. You know, I didn't have a problem with growing long hair, so I didn't have to get haircuts. but I went from a very structured, disciplined place where sometimes playing wasn't fun.
Right.
If you weren't winning. If you're winning, yeah, you're having fun. But it was difficult. And then I went to Pittsburgh, and it was like a whole new, it was always fun. But it was structured, it was disciplined. As long as you're winning, you're having fun. But it was like, it was different now in Pittsburgh. So I would go in there, and I remember sitting there and Danny Bylsma, and that's where I had Tony Granato too. So it was a really good staff. Mike Yeo was there, who is one of my favorite coaches as well. And I went in there, and Bylsma would be the type of guy where you'd be out at practice and you'd be skating laps at the beginning just to warm up, stretching. And Dan Bylsma would be one of the last guys on the ice, just like normal with coaches, to start practice. And he would come out, look very nonchalant, just walk over to the boards or skate over to the boards, and he have his glasses on. He just grab a water bottle, he'd take a swig, take a squirt of the water bottle, and then he'd just douse himself in the face. And he'd be like, whoa, let's go, boys! Another day in the National Hockey League. And this is something, well, you liked it, you know?
Yeah.
And we would do these things. We had the breakaway competitions we would do all the time. We call it Juice Boy, where the loser had to get all the boys juice after practice, or Mustache Boy, where the loser had to grow a mustache for a month.
Oh, that's fun. That's really fun.
I had my big pickup truck. He did a thing where...
You didn't almost run over him, did you?
No, I didn't. Jay McKee had this monster truck as well, and Dan Bylsma did Car Wash Boy. And whoever lost had to wash Jay McKee's monster truck.
Now, hold on. Were there
Dan
stipulations? Was it like drive through a car wash?
No,
or like
no.
You had to physically yourself wash
you
the vehicle?
You had a bucket in the loading
yes.
dock and had to do it.
Old school.
And Dan participated in these things, and Dan lost. So Dan Bylsma had to wash Jay McKee's monster truck in the parking lot. And that's the stuff we loved about. Like, I love playing for him because he was with us. He'd do it with us.
Would he do that in the room? Like, what about before the game? Like, I'm fascinated, and we don't see it a lot. I know in the playoffs we get a camera in the dressing room now, and we saw some great speeches last year. What about a Dan Bylsma, like, pregame speech in the dressing room? What were those like?
He was good. He was really good. Dan Bylsma, he... studies. I remember.
Did he ever douse himself with water?
Those? He'd kick garbage cans over, not in a.
But like a let's get fired up way.
Yeah, like come on, boys, let's go here. You know, another day in the National. And he was really good at just keeping it lighthearted. But he's a student of. He's always reading books and trying to figure out the psyche of a coach or the player and how to handle and manage those things. So I think these things at times.
Oh, so he actually reads about this stuff
and
the philosophies and theories on it?
When they won the cup, because I wasn't on that team, when they won the cup in 2009 with Dan being the coach, I think the next year, that's when I came in that summer, I remember seeing that he was going to Steelers training camp. I don't know if it was Mike Tomlin at the time or if it was It wasn't Bill Cowher, I don't think. It was Mike Tomlin.
I think
Tomlin.
It would have been Tomlin then.
It was Tomlin. He was following him around and asking what it was like, because he wanted to get in the psyche of what it was like to defend a championship. And these things were, he was always doing that. Anyways, so my point being, he knew how to keep it light and he knew when to be serious, and he had a real good balance in those areas.
I think it's a good point because we talk so much, right, about the best players in any sport, NHL, NBA, whatever it is, being students of the game, right? Like people talk about Crosby and his work ethic and his off-season training and everything that he does, he studies and gets better in little ways. Coaches can do that too. Yeah. So it's interesting to hear the approach Dan Bylsma had to sort of getting as much information as possible. How does this coach do it? Even though it's a different sport, there's stuff to learn there, even though it's the NFL compared to the NHL. So I think it's super interesting. I would have loved to see a video of a Dan Bylsma kicking a garbage can to get you boys fired up before a game. Sounds like it would be very entertaining and hard not to be jacked up after something like that. We're going to bring our first guest into the conversation here, John Buccigross. We heard Robert talking about Bylsma just now and some of his ways of getting the team amped up. How do you get amped up for a show?
I like a double bourbon neat and Blink 182 to 11 because my stereo goes to 11.
Oh, I love that. Now I got to ask, like, your favorite Blink song.
All the small things I think will go down as their kind of their anthem. That was right in the NHL Tonight days in the early aughts. So that's very, it's sentimental. It's
right.
High-paced pop punk, which I kind of have. I'm kind of a speed freak, so that really gets me going. So, good music and working out, getting a good workout late morning, real good music in my AirPods. I am never happier than that moment. So I timed this interview. I just got back from the gym because when I'm done with the gym, my brain synapses are firing. I'm creative.
You're
I'm
ready
thoughtful.
To go.
I am so ready to go.
I love it. Also, What's My Age Again? Another classic,
yes,
too. That could always be a good one as well.
Those are top two. It's kind of like the Mr. Brightside human killers debate. Like, I think human could be number one. Mr. Brightside will always be there, In the Name of Love, Pride, U2 song. But boy, human's just like that perfect pop song. I love those perfect 3.5 minute pop songs that are just packaged perfectly and catching. And I play them to death when they come out and they hook me on. I'll play them 20 times a day. Like Maroon 5's Memories right now. I play it 20 times a day right now.
You're like me. When I like a song, I just repeat over and over and over and over again until I almost am like, okay, I almost don't like this song anymore. I can't keep playing it.
I don't get there because, like, even going back to Take On Me by A-ha, when that comes on, it feels like the first time I heard it. That song has never gotten old. Again, the perfect pop song, just like Heaven, The Cure, Hall of Fame, perfect pop song. When Doves Cry, Prince, Hall of Fame, perfect pop song.
Oh, this is so good
song.
Right now.
Bucci, I don't know. I don't want to speak for Jackie. I kind of want to join his workout group.
I
feel like
great.
If you're attacking your day like you are right now after your workout, I want to be a part of that. I want that energy.
I would run through walls,
yes.
I think.
I wake up, I hit my knees, and I pray that I'm thankful that I'm alive. It's the first thing I say, thank you that I'm alive. That's a great way to start your day. Just be thankful you're breathing. That's a great start. I go downstairs, eat my avocado with sea salt and pepper, 6 big scoops of high-fat, low-sugar, sugar yogurt, and I head to the gym, work out like a dog like I just did. Now I'll go home and have 4 scrambled eggs with a piece of cheese and heavy whipping cream, sausage, bacon, and I'm ready.
I need to start living life the way you live.
That's
life.
Nice,
it
man.
Sounds incredible.
Work nights, you got all day, so it's great.
Since you brought up music, I'm going to ask you really quick. Are you a Swiftie? Are you a Taylor Swift fan at all? I know she's not pop punk, but she is one of the biggest stars on the planet.
I do. I respect the talent. I respect the catalog of work. But, hey, we're immune to some things in life. Some people are immune to Mozart, one of the most brilliant musical minds in the history of the world. But some people just don't. They can't get their hooks into them. It's kind of a genetic, natural DNA thing. So while I respect Swiftie and what she's done, it just doesn't grab me like maybe other artists, would.
Yeah, you're not playing her during your workout. I got it.
No, I don't have any Taylor Swift on my phone to answer that question. So yeah, but I respect the talent and what she does. And if I hear a song out, that's a good song. But again, it just doesn't hook into me.
As a hardcore Swiftie, I respect that answer.
No, great answer.
Yeah.
Great answer. Bucci, I want to ask you because I sit there and even in my days of playing, you've been such an advocate for hockey, and I love your passion for hockey, but I love your passion for college hockey. I love your passion for, I don't know, there's, it's Where did that come from? What is it about the college hockey that maybe even grabbed you a little bit more? And then obviously you're doing great things with your college hockey memorabilia, or your hats and your Bucci Gras Overtime Challenge, all that good stuff.
Well, I grew up a hockey fan, loving the game. I learned the game on the radio, really exposed to it. My dad was a Boston guy who raised us in Ohio and Pennsylvania. So the Bruins were like the Patriots are now. They were a New England phenomenon in the late 60s, early 70s. They won the cup in 70 and 72 when I was 4 and 6. I was always at my dad's hip. He played slow pitch softball. He played semi-pro football when he was a younger man in Boston. He played high school hockey with no mask at Boston Latin. So he was just a huge competitive sports guy, born during the Depression, earned everything he got, just gritty, temperamental, emotional, and so I saw him growing up with him, but also thoughtful and kind. He never hit me. He was a big sweetheart teddy bear. He's still alive. He's 88. And so I would sit next to him, and he would listen to Boston Bruins games on the radio. You could get Boston radio station crystal clear back then in Pittsburgh. And so I would invent the game in my head. And to me, Boston or hockey, when you hear that organ and you hear the fights being called and the slashings, hockey was like this gothic kind of, it was almost like a combination of gothic and church. Because you had this organ, you had this blood, they're talking sacrifice, yeah. I'd go to church. There's a guy up there on the cross, and they're talking about, crucifixion and murder, and there's a big organ, just like they play at Maple Leaf Garden. So to me, hockey was like church. And so I invented the game in my head. I think that's why, Rupper, it stuck in my subconscious, because I invented everything. Of course, being a kid, I probably timed everything, the fights, the blood, the mayhem, by five. So I'm picturing all this stuff going on. It's like watching 300 or something. To me, that's what I saw in my 7-8-year-old brain when I thought, listen to Boston Bruins, Montreal Canadiens games on the radio as a little kid next to my dad. That's what I invented. So that's why hockey stuck. And then college, I was exposed to the Frozen Four in my job previous to ESPN in Providence. And then when ESPN lost hockey in 2004, we were all heartbroken. And then a couple of years after that, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to ask them if I can do some college hockey play-by-play for the regional. Did that for a few years. Asked them if I could do the Frozen Four 7 years ago. And then, and I always tell there's NHL fans, there's different kinds of fans. I'm a hockey fan. My boys played youth hockey. I played pickup on the ponds and stuff when I was a kid. I'm a big NHL fan. So to me, I like all kinds of hockey. And so to me, college hockey is just it's a different flavor of the hockey pie. And so, being involved, being the voice of being the play-by-play guy for the Frozen Four, I feel it's my obligation to immerse myself, know the game, respect the game. So when I call the game, it's not just a guy popping in, showing up for one game, then going back to what he normally does, which is, I think, in the past, what you get from college hockey play-by-play guys.
Well, you do a fantastic job, and even just looking at your Twitter, I mean, you're constantly talking about the college game and putting some of these kids on the radar. So, kudos to you on that, because I think you do a fantastic job. You mentioned Boston, what hockey is in that market, the Bruins coming off basically laying a smackdown on the Montreal Canadiens last night. And we spend so much time talking about this top line. No Patrice Bergeron last night. But we had this interesting discussion this morning about if one of those three players on that top line, Pasternak, Marchand, or Bergeron, is injured, which loss has the biggest impact? Like, which one player taken off that line would they suffer the most, do you think?
I think it's Marchand by far. I think he might be the best winger in the NHL all around. You look, since 2016, he's got more points than Alex Ovechkin by a lot. His plus minus is way better by a lot. He's got a great wrist shot. He can score from 30 feet, 20 feet away. You like guys who can score from distance. Pasternak's got a Steven Stamkos, Alex Ovechkin, elite one-timer. He's an unbelievable talent. Bergeron's a Hall of Famer. I think Marchand is trending in that direction. I think when he's done, he'll be a Mark Recchi comp, but he also adds just that pestiness factor, that energy factor that is, as Rupper knows, it's so important to have those guys. And so he brings that little extra sauce to his game besides the elite playmaking, the ability to score from distance, hand-eye coordination, all that stuff, hockey sense, competitiveness, healthy, in great shape, his commitment to the game, his dedication to the game. So again, Bergeron's a Hall of Famer. Marchand will be a Hall of Famer. Pasternak is off to that. He's off to that start because, again, he's the other guy who's gritty, can shoot, a great hands, great skater, creative, and again, that grit factor. And he's a likability teammate as well. He's just funny, and everyone likes him. He's not a heavy presence. He's a light presence. He makes the room better. He doesn't take from the room. He gives to the room. So, but I think in the end, Marchand, I wouldn't trade him for Nikita Kucherov right now. I bet there's very few GMs. Hey, who do you want? This, I'm talking last year, this year, next year. Three-year window. Who do you want for the playoffs? Who do you want in your room all? Who do you want to practice every day? Are you pouting at practice? Are you getting kicked out of practice like Kucherov? Or are you bringing something?
Yeah.
I wouldn't trade Marchand for any winger in the game right now.
No, that's a great point. I think he would be the one guy that line would not be able to do what they do without Brad Marchand. But now I'm just trying to put some pieces together here, Bucci. I know you a little bit, met you a few times. And now we're just from this conversation, we talk about your flavor of music. We know about your crazy working out. We know about your upbringing and loving those certain aspects of the game and the Boston Bruins. Now, Brad Marchand, I'm just picturing you in the NHL as being this edgy, toeing the line, you know what I mean? Kind of verbally getting involved, but also just being tough to play against. So is that how you'd think if you were to say, picture John Buchegross in the NHL, you'd be that 100%, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, I was a decent high school athlete, just very, very average, but I was hyper competitive. I was chippy. I hated to lose. I was emotional. I would slash. I would push. I would trip. I would grab. I was definitely, I was a skinny kid, but I was so competitive. No, I think it was natural and watching my dad. Again, my dad was just hyper emotional. I felt like he took it too far, so I tried to balance that. I'm kind of a balancing personality. I want everybody to be happy. I'm an empath. I feel everything. But when it came to the playing field, I was too competitive. I got embarrassed by some of my actions. What I did. If it's the last minute of a hockey game, I'm that guy slashing ankles, crash checking backs. That's just, and I'm not happy about that. I'm better now. I'm not that way now. I've lost that competitiveness. I don't play like in these over 40 basketball leagues or anything because these guys are still playing like high school. I've had enough. I just want to drink my bourbon and listen to my James Taylor and meditate. I'm happy with doing that now. I'm not that guy who's going to go to YMCA and play like it's game 7 anymore. But I did when I was younger.
The passion is real. I love it. Something you and Brad Marchand have in common, the passion for what you do. Did you guys see his comments last night during the game? Like, the game wasn't over, and he got interviewed during the intermission, and he was like, oh, we just love silencing the crowd here. I was just like, oh, my gosh, Brad. Like, he is so good at the chirp game. No matter what it is, trolling the fans, trolling the players, like, he is so good.
His ability to back it up is what there's been a lot of guys who have been able to run their mouth or have – volunteered to run their mouth over the years.
Yeah.
Not too many can back it up like him, though. I mean, I feel like that's what fuels this guy because he'll say those things and he'll go out and absolutely dominate. That's what makes him really unique. I don't know. I love
that. I see that in the NHL and I see it in college. And my fear is that the NHL, what the big fear for me for the game is the players, there's become a culture of sameness. Players look alike.
Yes.
They move alike. They're the same size. That's the danger. He brings so much uniqueness. And I'll go to even more so these college hockey games. And I'm thinking, where is that guy out there who's going to take this game over with his personality, who's going to play like a maniac, who's going to play with this? This is life or death. And again, I know sports isn't, but when I played, every game was life and death moment, every moment. And that's how he kind of plays. And I see that sometimes. I go, where's that kid who's going to go out and say, you know what? I'm going to go nuts every shift for 40 seconds. Everyone's going to notice me. I'm still going to be productive. I'm going to make plays like Brad Marchand. I'm going to score, but I'm going to get in that dirty areas. I'm going to be demonstrative in my actions and my movements and just pour it out. And I see carefulness. I see system-based stuff in people's heads. And again, you can be there, but I just think there's an opportunity for any young kid listening or any young kid playing at any level, go out there and take ownership of your shift. And go. And I just think there's an opportunity for these kids to stand out. And look at Brad Marchand. I mean, Brad Marchand's been the underdog his whole life. He's got a chip on his shoulder. He's still that kid who's in the minors buried in Providence, not a first-round pick, trying to prove his way. If he didn't get a break here or there, when he got his opportunity, if he didn't score for 12, 13 games, he got sent back down. And just because of timing and who he got to play with, and they never have worked out. He knows he got lucky in a lot of regard, took advantage of his luck. But it could have gone the other way, and he could have been in a Hershey bear for 8 years.
Yeah, I think, too, like that passion, that personality, knowing who a player is and the players that wear the heart on their sleeve, though, there's a reason those guys are fan favorites. And I know people that aren't Boston Bruins fans don't like Brad Marchand, but those are the guys that get attention on the game, too. And I think it's good for hockey when you see personality a little bit more.
Yeah, I'm not about marketing yourself and getting attention for getting attention. I don't like that part. That actually turns me off. I like the natural guys. Like you look at, like Rupper knows Max Talbot. He just had a gift of personality. Some guys right. have that gift. It's natural. And so he helps the room. He lights it up. And he just adds something. And that's why I thought the Penguins the last couple of years, the shift to them, they just became this very – the personalities are all kind of the same. They're kind of boring. And I think they still need that kind of guy, that personality guy who can come in and just kind of give the room a tweet. Oshie did that kind of in the Capitals. He's kind of that interesting character, drinks through his sweater, and just a college kid who's kind of crazy. And that just – you need those kinds of guys in a long season and then, of course, in the playoffs – to kind of have that, and you know, Ovi's kind of a nut too as well. So personality is very important. Hockey's a blood sport. It's an emotion sport, and so you need emotional blood personality players to get the most out of your team. And some teams don't have that. Even the Maple Leafs. Do the Maple Leafs have a nut? Do they have that guy? Are they too, you know? Are they too quiet? So yeah. and maybe that'll come out now. So, but that's a big part of hockey in my mind.
Well, it's been a heck of a start to the season. A lot of good storylines, a lot of crazy goals being scored. I'm curious for you, in terms of the actual hockey and what's going on in the league on the ice and the standings, what has been your maybe favorite storyline so far to this point in the season?
I think, you know, one of them is Barry Trotz, the legend of Barry Trotz. I mean, we knew he was a Hall of Fame coach, but I look at this guy and he's probably so underrated. And I remember it was right after he won the cup, and there was these stories about he's asking for Mike Babcock money. And I remember quote tweeting somebody. It's like, well, he should get Mike Babcock money. He's got as many cups as Mike Babcock. I never understood why Joel Quenneville wasn't coaching Team Canada and why Joel Quenneville wasn't coaching the World Cup for Canada. I go, I mean, he got three cups. Why is Mike Babcock the default coach for Team Canada? And I think he's one of those guys who interviews well. He says these words and these phrases that sound really, really smart. And he's like a package corporate speaker, guest speaker kind of guy, has that gift for language and a mind that can come up with these phrases. Where Joel's just going to drop some F-bombs and say, let's go, boys. We're going to win this game. You know, and GMs and owners, they don't quite get that. They get impressed by the wordy kind of wordsmith guy. And so I just think Barry Trotz, what he's done, his command, I think he's almost got like a Bill Belichick, do your job. He gets guys to buy in and play the way he wants to. Ultra successful. So I just like to see that guy. And I give him as much shine whenever I can. And it's great to see the Islanders in a playoff position again.
Yeah, he's such a great human being too, Barry Trotz. Like when you're around him and you talk to him and you talk to players that have played for him, they all just have this incredible respect for who he is as a person outside of the game and the yep. sort of responsibility he takes for getting to know his players outside of the rink and what they're going through and what they got going on in their life sort of outside of hockey. So that makes
and
him really
Kenny
great
Holland
too.
In Edmonton. Kenny yeah. Holland in Edmonton. I know him well. I've golfed a few times with him. He's just the most hilarious guy in the world. When he tells a story, no one's funnier when they tell a story than Kenny Holland. He was, do I take that job in Edmonton? Do I stay in Detroit, make great money, and just kind of ease my way out, enjoy my 60s? I got a great salary. I make multi-million dollars a year. I'm right behind Steve Yzerman. I can stay in the same house in Michigan. Or do I go to Edmonton in the winter and take on this thing? It looks like it's going to be years in the making.
Bring a jacket. You know,
but I was so pumped when he took the job because people were telling me, tell him not to take it. And when I heard the rumor, I texted him right away. I go, Kenny, take this job. And come to find out, he was actually in Ireland golfing when he got that text. I figured he was like holed up in his house thinking, do I take this job? Do I not take this job? He's in negotiation. He was in Ireland golfing. But I had no idea he was there when I sent the text. But it was really, it was real inspirational to me that he took that job at his age and the challenge. He said, you know, screw it. I'm taking it. I'm fearless. I'm going to figure it out. And he's just an organized, great mind. Everyone respects him. And so Kenny Holland, Barry Trotz, I like these guys who are just real pure hockey. Don't get the attention some other people get, but they're great for me. That's what life's about. Doing something, doing it well. Don't care about what people think and don't worry about accolades, how much attention you get. It'll all take care of itself.
Bucci, you just mentioned golf a couple times there and some of these relationships you have in the game with guys and you're going golfing. And I did hear that you were golfing in the foursome with Doug Armstrong when he got his hole-in-one. So can you pull back the curtain a little bit and
How was his celebration? I mean, this, he's so professional in the way he comes across. He's such a great guy. Tell me he did a fist pump or something. Tell me he was yelling. Tell me he threw a water bottle or something. He was so jacked up. What happened?
Well, I mean, on the particular hole, you really can't see the hole too well. But full transparency, I was not in his group. I was on the same trip.
Oh.
But yes, I was in the foursome, but I was on the trip. And so I can't recall if I saw the ball go in or not. But no, Doug, he's got a dad personality. He's a big guy. He commands a respect, and you want to please him. You want to be happy. Oh, I want Doug to be happy, happy Doug. And so he's like this big puppy. It's like a big Saint Bernard, you know. And he just went, oh, he's got to do it, Doug. Hey, I got to do it. And
gosh. No,
He's a cool guy, and he just has, I can see that command he has when he walks in. I want to impress Dad. I want Dad to be happy. But, yeah, he aced that hole with Cabot, and it was something. And it was, yeah, but golf and hockey go together. Obviously, because hockey players have summers off. So that's why they're good people. Why are they good golfers? Because they got summers off. They can play. And of course, weight transfer, they understand, finishing on the front side for real nerdy golf stuff. But, yeah, it's been great for me to get to know Ray Bourque, to get to know, you know, obviously Darren Pang and Ray Ferraro and Bobby Orr because of golf. Golf and hockey have enriched my life so much. And because I can play a little bit, when you play with these guys, they'll play with you again. If you stink and you play with them, they won't call you again. So you got to – and that's one thing my dad told me when I was young. He saw it in business. When he went go to these little meetings, the bosses want to play with the good players. So he wanted me to become decent at golf. So in the business world, you get invited to charity events, or I get to play with players or GMs, and I create relationships. That helps me in my job, just enriches life. And he was right. He saw that. He says, you need to be good at golf because it'll help your life. And it did.
And for anyone that likes to play golf that's listening, Cabot is in Nova Scotia, and it is a beautiful, beautiful golf course. So
it is. I drove. It's about 11 hours from me here in Connecticut. Drove north through, you know, New Hampshire and then up through Maine across Prince Edward Island. It was a beautiful drive.
Yeah,
I loved it. Took my pickup truck and drove right there and played for a week and then drove back. And it was an awesome August trip.
Yeah, I remember when Panger came back from that trip, too. I saw him shortly thereafter, and he said you guys had a blast. All right. We want to play a game with you before we let you go, if you're into it. It's a play on your name, sort of. Now, we know it's Bucci Gross, but the segment is Bucci Gross or Bucci Great? And we're going to give you a few fun topics here, and you're going to give us your take on what you think. So it's basically a thumbs up or thumbs down segment. Cool?
No extra option of booger sauce.
Hey, the segment's named after you. It's a play on your name, right. So you can do whatever you want.
Okay, butcher grass or booger sauce. Okay.
Okay. So, obviously, American Thanksgiving this week. Everybody's talking about the meal, and a couple of days ago, there was a lot of hot takes in terms of food. So I want to know, ham instead of turkey as the main part of the meal, is that Bucci Gross or Bucci Great?
That's booger sauce, Bucci Gross. I am not a ham guy in any way. My mom gave me chipped ham and mustard for my school sandwiches back in the day, but I will probably never have a piece of ham the rest of my life.
Okay, well stated. Rupper, yeah. Where are you on this?
I like for holidays having a ham, but I will say what you said there and chipped ham. I don't know. Is that a? Because you know we're from the same neck of the woods. I'm from Ohio and live in Western Pennsylvania. Is that a chipped ham a thing in that area? Because it's gross. I don't like it.
I think it was chipped ham and mustard. That was my school sandwich.
No.
East Pike Elementary in Indiana, PA. I haven't seen it since. But if I do ham, like the thick regular ham, if I dip it in applesauce, I do like that.
Yeah, like a big ham, I'm okay with.
Here's my thing. My whole thing is, you can have ham. But it can't be, like, you can't have a side turkey dish. Like, you can't put turkey on the side for Thanksgiving. It's like you can't make turkey, you know, the side piece.
The secondary.
At the Thanksgiving dinner, okay? Like, that's just weird to me. All right, next up, I'm Canadian, so I had never heard of this until I moved to the United States. Sweet potato casserole or a sweet potato dish with marshmallow. It sounds good to me. I've never had it. Bucci Gross or Bucci Great?
You know, that could be Bucci Great. I like the puffiness factor. There's a bit of, you know, I'll have a sweet potato, you know, a couple times a year. They're pretty good. The microwave kind, you can put it and just scoop it right out of there. I kind of like that. So marshmallows, that could be, but it almost brings in a Lucky Charms kind of consistency. And I'm not a Lucky Charms cereal guy. I don't eat cereal anymore. I'm more of a low-sugar carnivore. But back in the day when I was eating two bowls a day, I was not a Lucky Charms guy. So it could remind me of Lucky Charms.
I say Bucci great. I'm a huge dessert guy. Yeah, that's my weakness. And that's basically instituting your dessert in your meal, and I'm good with that.
Good point.
We'll end on a hockey one. Robin Lehner made his feelings about the shootout very well known on Twitter this week, looking to analysts and media, sort of tongue-in-cheek, but for help. He's not very good in the shootout. I believe career, he's 8-22. So he took to Twitter saying he doesn't like it. It's not part of hockey, but if anyone has any tips, let him know. So he actually said, I believe at one point, he would be pulled before a shootout. He'd be down for that. So pulling a bad shootout goalie before the shootout, is that Bucci gross or Bucci great?
That's Bucci great. Why not? Life's about matchups, especially team sports. Why not put the guy who's better? And if he's up for it, got no problem sticking in Corey Crawford if he feels, and obviously if he's going to approach it with that attitude. You know, you can't approach that anything about life with that attitude. Then if it's a defeatist attitude, hey, you control how you react to things, and you control how you feel. That is Stoicism 101. Study it, Marcus Aurelius, live it, and Robert Lehner needs, someone needs to get him a book on Stoicism. It'll change his life.
Okay.
But can you imagine being that backup goalie, though? Hey, man, listen, I get it. I get it that you're not too confident, but I've been sitting here smelling nachos and sitting here talking to the fans for three periods. I can't go in there. You know, I'm putting that guy in a tough spot.
Hey, baseball has pinch hitters. I'm sure my hardcore baseball fans remember Manny Mota back in the day. I don't know if he still has the all-time record for most pinch hits. It could have been broken since then, but he was a Dodger. When he showed up to the ballpark, he's like, I'm going to have to bat 3.5 hours from now. I better be ready 3.5 hours from now to be at my best. So Corey Crawford, you know, hey, he knows when the game starts. It's only 2 hours away. He'll be ready.
That's a great comparison. I love that. Listen, thanks for doing this. We appreciate this. You're so great. We love you here on Puck Culture and at the network. You do great work. Have a great Thanksgiving. Enjoy not eating marshmallow on your sweet potato and listening to some Blink-182 tomorrow morning.
Go woof down those eggs, bacon, and sausage right now after your workout, too.
It is time. Thanks, Rupper. Thanks, Jackie. Big fans. I watch you guys all the time on NHL Network, and you're awesome.
Bucci Gras is great. He's like one of those guys that's so energetic, you can't help but feel energetic yourself in a conversation with him.
No, I mean, we're sitting here sipping our coffees. This guy sounds like he wants to run through a wall. Or he probably has run through a wall already up to this point. I love talking to him. He's a good dude. He's a really good guy, big fan of the game.
Yeah, so good. We'll have to have him back on the show. Since we were talking about food with him, what is your most controversial food take? Do you have one?
If we're sticking with... Let's stick with Thanksgiving for a moment, because the one thing that I can't stand about Thanksgiving is I love cranberry sauce, okay?
Okay.
I like throwing cranberry sauce on like your mashed potatoes or your turkey or just mixing it. It's a nice thing to mix with anything.
Okay.
It disgusts me when you get it out of the can. It's just like a blob of, it's shaped, it even has like the rings around it from
the
can.
Jelly is indented.
Like,
yeah.
Like, why are you? That's disgusting.
Canned cranberries, gross.
Why? And so I feel like so many people do it. I want like the real cranberry sauce where you got like,
I don't know.
Yeah, you make it and it's whatever. That's the one.
But I learned how to make real cranberry sauce this year.
Did you?
Yeah, it's really easy actually. So that's why like the canned cranberry stuff is even more inexcusable because so easy
you know
to make
to
it yourself. Yeah. Like actually so easy. Okay, what was your other one?
My other one that. This is something that I was brought up on, and my grandmother was, you know, we all have our grandparents that had those things that just stuck with you. Oh, grandma did this. We'd go to grandma's house and this.
Yeah.
My sister and I still talk about it. My grandmother used to make peanut butter and pickle sandwich. And
what?
It was like, you take Wonder Bread, so white bread.
Yeah.
You put peanut butter on it, not crunchy, creamy peanut butter, sweet pickles. You take the sweet pickles, which are a little smaller, and you slice them long ways, and you put them on there. It is, Jackie, I'm telling you.
I can't.
You have to. I'm telling you. I wouldn't be saying you, any of the listeners, you got to try it. Just try it.
Sweet pickles
and peanut butter sandwich. It is incredible. It's that sweet and salty before I really knew that was a thing and grew
Sounds
up on that.
Disgusting.
I actually had one 2 weeks ago. I made it, and I can't get, my kids won't try it. Not many people try it, but I will say this. I've always pushed it.
And people
not many have tried it, but the ones who have said it's actually really good.
Here's the deal. I will try it, and I will put it on social, I'll film it, I'll put it on social media. I will review
I
the
like
sweet
that.
Pickle peanut butter sandwich.
And how about this? The people who come, the people that try, if you give me a view of you eating peanut butter and pickles, give me your
thing. Take a video
and,
I'll try it. We'll try your things. Send us your weird food things that you
that
like.
That is
and,
a weird one,
and maybe we'll make a segment of it. We'll just try it. Try a bunch of different random stuff and post it online.
This might not be good for
We're asking for it now. Yeah, but I will try that. And you know, we can't go on food too much longer, but like smooth peanut butter over crunchy every single time. Like I actually don't like crunchy peanut butter. Don't at me. It's disgusting. All right. I wanted to... Keith Yandel losing all the teeth. Yeah. Hockey players losing teeth. It's commonplace in the NHL. It's not even surprising anymore when it happens. But I want to know if you've ever... Like, what's the worst thing you've played through?
Yeah, I don't know what...
Or were you not tough?
That way... I was just like, no, I'm not feeling it tonight. I'm out. No, I think that that's something that's just so embedded in hockey players to play through. And
right.
I mean, there was nothing really crazy. I mean, there's certainly times where I probably shouldn't have played through an injury that I did. And when I say shouldn't, like, I was probably more of a factor to get scored against because I shouldn't be playing because I'm not 100%.
Right, right.
Or, you know, you're never 100%. But that Keith Yandel thing, that was, I mean, you're talking, to play through that and his Ironman streak and all those things, yeah, I've seen players, though, play with, you know, broken bones, broken feet, broken leg. I've seen guys play with an actual, I mean, we saw, remember Gregory Campbell in the playoffs?
Yeah.
He's blocking these shots and he's making it to the bench, finishing a shift on a broken leg. I mean, there's been some crazy stuff. I think the one time I remember when we won the cup in Jersey in 2003, during that playoff run, I'm pretty sure the fans can look it up. If you looked up John Madden 2003 playoff face.
Right.
I'm assuming it'll come up. He blocked a shot right, I want to say it was around his cheekbone.
Okay.
And he had stitches all the way around his eye. It looks like a Halloween costume. And this guy,
it's like Brendan Lemieux the other day with the black eye. He looks like a character out of like a Batman movie
or like he should be in Joker
or something. Like he looked scary.
And the guys, you know, in this case, John Madden, they're not missing a shift. And guess what they're not doing as well? They're not altering their game. He's still going to go down on the penalty kill and try to block a shot. And I mean, there's stuff that when you see, it's crazy, but it starts at a young age. You're always told, you don't stay on the ice unless you're really hurt. You know, you're not going to stay down on the ice and have the coach come out or in the pros have the trainers come out. If you're staying down, you need help. And I think that that's something that's always been instilled in players at a young age.
Yeah, it's crazy. Hockey players are nothing if not tough. I mean, the stuff that these guys play through is insane. Even Blake Coleman, when he lost all those teeth, had like the nerve pulled out, then goes out and scores that crazy goal. I bet you he would like the sweet pickle sandwich. He's like Mr. Pickles.
There you go.
I bet you he'd like it.
He's my guy. Maybe he'll be my sponsor for it.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, yeah, see if he can create like pickles for
Mark
you.
Edward Vlasic. I can shoot both of them. We'd be perfect.
Should get them to try it next time
we see
them and see if they can support your cause. Yeah, hockey players are tough. They're also resilient, and we love a good comeback story in sports, and we certainly had that when the Vegas Golden Knights played their first season, go all the way to the final. Nobody expected it, and we kept saying during that season, someone's got to make this into a movie, and someone has done that. It's a documentary. It's called Valiant. You can see it December 3rd on all streaming services, as well as DVD and Blu-ray. Today, we're welcoming in the director of that documentary, Cruz Angeles. Cruz, thanks for doing the show. We appreciate the time. When did making this documentary become a reality for you?
Actually, it was during the Stanley Cup in June. I think they were in their third game. They were losing to the Capitals. And I got a phone call from the executive producer who wanted to make this film. And, you know, I looked into it. And I was like, this is an incredible story. And what I didn't realize was that, you know, there was a lot of love for this team even after they lost in Las Vegas. And, you know, a lot of people see Las Vegas as sort of a destination, not a place where people live. And once we started making the film, what I realized is that there's this whole community that services the tourists that go there. And the reason they fell in love with this team is because the Vegas Golden Knights brought some pride and honor to this place in the desert, especially when there was a lot of people hating on the idea of bringing hockey to Las Vegas. And that's kind of where it all started. It was literally right after the Stanley Cup final. And I went on Twitter and I just saw the outpouring of love from people that live there. And there was just an amazing population of hockey fans, which I didn't expect in the West Coast, especially in Las Vegas. And, you know, we thought that there was something there that was a little deeper than just the story on the ice, which in and of itself was an incredible story.
Cruz, I want to ask you, with all the great, in as a whole, what a great story this was, hence the fact that you're doing this documentary on it. Was there one? There's so many different little stories, individually speaking, of kind of the underdog and these guys that are getting second chances and trying to rewrite their own script personally and collectively. Is there any one story that sticks out to you that you really liked in this process?
Wild Bill, you know, he was a defensive player who, I think, only made 3 or 4 goals, or I think it was 6 goals actually the year before. And then he's given a shot, and he's told, you know, you should play offense. We want you to be a shooter. And he goes to, like, score upwards of 43 goals that season. And that was a remarkable story because it was all about second chances. You're right. And in some ways, what's amazing about the story, once you look deeper into this narrative, is that Las Vegas is kind of a place where a lot of people go for a second chance, you know? So the community, it resonated with the community. I mean, there's even a movie starring Marilyn Monroe called The Misfits. So the fact that they were like the golden misfits was just fitting. You know, they went there to try to prove everybody else wrong, everybody else who rejected them. And I think, you know, that's part of why this is a great film, because it is an underdog story, but it's also like an incredible Cinderella story. And they went through a lot of obstacles. I mean, they went through 4 goalies, which is, unheard of in the NHL. Somehow this team was a mirror for the community that had been there for a long time, that, and somehow, in some ways, was invisible and has been invisible. Because, like I said, everybody thinks of the strip when they go to Las Vegas. They just think about going there and having fun. But nobody really sees this place as, you know, a town where, you know, regular folk live there and they work there and they service the strip. But in some weird way, the strip is like Times Square for New Yorkers, you know. People don't go there. It's only there for the tourists. And this team was able to bring the Vegas residents out of the woodwork and give them something to be proud of.
I'll say this, covering the Vegas Golden Knights in year one was one of the best stories I've ever had the privilege of covering in my career. I'm not surprised at all that you guys have turned this into a documentary. It's called Valiant. You can see it December 3rd on streaming services, DVD and Blu-ray. Thank you for this, Cruz. We appreciate the time.
Thank you for having me.
Big thanks to Cruz for coming on and chatting with us about that documentary. It's going to be good. I'm going to watch it for sure. It's one of my favorite stories since I started covering sports, like I said. But, Rupert, this is your first time on Puck Culture. Did you like it?
Yes.
Told some great
it's
stories.
Been good. It's been good. It's, it's always fun to get a little bit of a change of pace. We don't have to... I mean, I love
you're
speaking.
Rocking your backwards hat. You're like casual Rupert.
Let's pump it real quick.
Okay.
This is my... this hat is a Vegas Golden Knights hat. I'm not a crazy. I'm not a fan of any team. I love all hockey teams, and
nice
I love
hat.
The hat. When I was in Vegas doing a shoot, I got this hat. Apparently, this is Paul Stastny's first designed hat, and he designs hats. And
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like it. But anyways, yeah. So yeah, no, I like it. Laid back, and it's a little different than what we're used to. But we love what we do normally, and this is just a little different.
Well, you've already told so many stories, so this might be a little difficult for you. But we end every show with a one-upper. So you're going to try to one-up Ryan Callahan's story from last week. And I know you saw it circulating on social media a little bit because it involved you. He told a story about you being late, him laying out your equipment, making it look like you were there, you were somewhere. And basically covering for you with torts.
He said that you never
bought him a beer. You never said thank you. You didn't really, show love for the move. That's what he said.
Okay, well, let me give the background a little bit more too.
Sure.
It was a playoff game. We were playing against the Washington Capitals in the second round of the playoffs.
How are you late for a playoff game?
Okay, well, I'm going to give you that.
Okay.
So I was the only player on the team that lived in Jersey. Okay. So I was coming over. I came over the GW Bridge. and I was coming down. I was coming down the West Side Highway.
It's George Washington for anyone listening that doesn't know what that means.
But when you live in Jersey, you're cool and you can say G-Dub, which is me. So, anyways, I'm driving to the rink. The president is in town in New York. I am unaware of this.
Like of the United States.
Of the United States of America. And the traffic is horrendous. They've closed down roads, yada, yada. I'm coming down. I'm stuck. I'm sitting on the West Side Highway, which runs down the West Bank of Manhattan.
Okay.
And I'm just sitting there. We're
bumper
not moving.
Bumper to bumper.
So let's just say, theoretically, I don't remember if the game was at 7 or 7:30. It's 7 o'clock game. You need to be in the locker room at 5 o'clock, 2 hours before the game. You usually have your meeting at 5:30, so an hour and a half before the game. Pretty much every NHL team has their meeting where the coach comes in and dresses the team. I'm going in early. I'm planning on going to the game early, taking my time. I'm stuck in this traffic, Jackie, for an hour, hour and a half. It's building. Now I'm starting to get to the point where I'm like, if this doesn't free up, or if I don't find a way to get there, I'm looking on my phone and there's no alternate route. It was bad. So I'm literally like, all right, I'm going to be late here. I don't know what to do. So I called I made a call in to one of the guys, and I was like, hey, I don't know, don't like announce this or anything, but I'm going to be a little bit late here, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And so what ended up happening is I ended up having to abandon my vehicle. Basically, I pulled off and I parked it.
What?
It like, I want to say it was around like 70th Street. Well, MSG's all the way down at whatever, 32nd, whatever, right around there. And I had to get out in my suit and run across the avenues and down the streets in my suit in the playoffs. I came in there, and again, this is the second round of the playoffs, so it's like May.
This is
I'm
serious.
I'm dripping. It's like 85 degrees out. I come in the locker room, walk in, change onto my sweaty suit and everything. I go in the locker room, and my stuff's laying on the floor already. No one's even looking at me in a funny way. Callie was my stallmate next to me.
Right.
And Callie goes, I'm like, Callie, what is this? And he's like, I laid your stuff out to look like you're here. I'm like, oh my gosh, is this guy for real? But now my thing, so no one even, well, I don't know how I feel about that. No one even noticed I was in there.
I mean, no one even noticed you weren't around.
It would have been nice to be like, before the game of the playoffs,
okay?
Be like, oh wait, where's Rupper? Like, why is he not here? But it's like, no one even noticed. We got our guys, Rupper's not here. So anyways, I felt like, I did say to him at the time, like, I feel, dude, I can't not. If Torts finds this out later, then I'm like going to be in the doghouse. I got to own up to it. So I went in his office and I told him, I'm like, Torts, I'm just letting you know I just got here. Like, this is what happened. I can bring in my suit if you want. It's drenched. I'm going to throw this thing out.
Yeah.
Like, I ran here. And so Callie was unbelievable.
What did Torts say?
Torts was like, I was expecting him to lose it. And he was just like, oh. And he literally was like, oh, I didn't even know you weren't here. He's like, go get dressed.
He's like, oh, I didn't even notice that you were gone.
Yeah, he's like, oh, cool. All right, go get dressed. He was totually cool about it. I'm like, wait, I actually would like if you were mad. Because
like,
make me feel
I feel like
you
I've got, like, you know, I'm pretty present when I'm here. I got like a good personality. I joke around. You didn't even notice me?
Yeah, so it's kind of a weird thing. But Callie, you know what?
You owe him a beer.
I do. It was one of, I will say this though. And I can't confirm or not if maybe in that moment I was kind of scared and I didn't maybe say thank you. I'm sure I probably said thank you.
You probably did.
I have pumped him so much I've told this story a bunch to teammates. I'm like, dude, Callie took my gear down. He took my sticks and put them in my stall to make it look like I was there. So I owe Ryan Callahan. He was one of the greatest leaders I played for, and he bailed me out even though I owned up to it.
Yeah, so it's a good story from both sides, actually, now that I know the other side of it. I love it. But that can't count as your one-upper. So
okay.
I hope you have something else ready, locked and loaded, ready to go. How are you going to one-up Callie?
Going to be tough, but I'm going to keep the story. Let's keep it with the Rangers because there was a bunch of fun things that happened in my 2 years there in New York. All right, there is just a behind-the-scenes type stuff.
Sure.
I guess that's what you're probably looking for, right?
Like so that. What we want on this podcast.
If you guys recall, back when we were in the Winter Classic in 2012, and so we had 24/7 following us around and doing all this stuff, and there was an incident that happened where Artem Anisimov,
oh no,
where he scores a goal against Tampa, and then he drops down, turns his stick over, and drops to a knee, and he does like his gun celebration, and he shoots
the goalie
of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Which then triggered Vinny LeCavier and the whole team to come over, and it started this mini brawl.
Right.
And of course,
understandably,
the referees are trying to defuse the situation, so they're going to get, they kick Artie out. And I'm injured at that time. I had knee surgery, so I was in the training room. I'm literally just, that's where I'd watch the game with one of the trainers, and I was just, my legs are up on the table, I got my crutches next to the table, and I'm watching this, and I'm like, lean forward on the TV, I'm like, did he just shoot the, oh my gosh. So I know that he's, I see him get thrown out, so he's coming in the locker room where I am at MSG, so I get on my crutches, I
hobble
go
over,
I hop in the locker room, and he's in the locker room, I go in there, and he's just sitting in the locker room, his head's in his hands, and I go, Artie, what was that? And he goes, what'd I do? I'm like, Artie, you shot their goalie. Like, you could have aimed your you know, fake stick gun anywhere in the arena. The one spot you couldn't aim it is at the goalie you just scored on.
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't understand. He's like, in Russia, when you score a goal, you're so happy and you celebrate all the time. And he's like, basically, like, I'm just happy.
Yeah.
I'm just happy I scored. I'm like, yeah, dude, but you can't shoot the other team's goalie.
Yeah.
And it was unbelievable the way that he had no idea. Like, the reaction was genuine. The Tampa Bay Lightning were so angry at him. I'm just saying, this guy behind closed doors,
he did not mean to offend anyone.
No ill will at all. But I don't know how he didn't mean any ill will. But he legitimately had no idea. And I think that he was like so
scared.
Like,
shoot your glove down or copycat
like,
a little bit.
Point it in the ceiling,
put it back in the holster,
you know. Put it back in the holster, things. But like, Artie was, I love him. He's so innocent. Like, it was an innocent mistake by him that literally.
Was everyone on your team the same way? Like, did he just shoot the goalie?
Yeah. I remember Sean Avery came into the, that was on the documentary. Sean Avery comes in, and obviously he's one of the best at pushing buttons of the other team. He just looks at him and just shakes his head. So
even
he probably
if
has
Sean
a lot of respect
Avery
for that.
Is shaking his head, like, oh my
he's
goodness.
Like, he just gave a little smirk.
That's
like,
when
right.
you know you've done something out there, because Sean Avery's done enough in his career, did enough in his career where people were having that reaction to him. So
yeah. So I don't know. I mean, crazy. That's my
That's the best story, I think.
Okay.
Well, so far.
It'll be good. It'll be good to keep getting back to these and seeing what other guys bring. And when I get on next time, we'll think about something
else. Everyone's going to have to elevate their game as the show goes. But this is great. I can't wait to have you back on. It's going to be hard to top that story, I think, next week. But it'll be fun trying. Enjoy your Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Enjoy real cranberry sauce.
I know you already
had
your Canadian Thanksgiving, but enjoy the American Thanksgiving as
I'm
well.
I'm going to enjoy the longer-ish weekend. Yeah. And maybe I'll have turkey, maybe I won't. I don't know. But
peanut butter and pickles, though. Guys, get on
I'm actually going to try the pickle peanut butter sandwich. I may regret it, but I just now the curiosity will kill me if I don't try it. So I'm going to try that while you're eating your turkey dinner over the next few days with your family. Mike, thanks for doing this. We appreciate the time. You can catch Rupper on NHL tonight, weeknights, and on the weekend as well on NHL Network. We are also a family of podcasts. So if you like fantasy hockey, you can get all your fantasy advice from the Fantasy on Ice podcast with Rob Reese and Pete Jensen. As for us, thank you for listening. Send us your thoughts if you'd like to on social media. Use the hashtag PuckCulture, and we will see you next week. Have a great holiday, everybody.